Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Tax Discrimination Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On December 9, 2014, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Alabama Department of Revenue v. CSX Transportation. The question presented in the case is twofold. First, whether a state violates the Railroad Revitalization and Regulatory Reform Act of 1976 or the 4R Act, by discriminating against a rail carrier when it requires rail carriers to pay a sales and use tax, but exempts railroads' competitors from paying the same tax, and two, whether in resolving a claim of unlawful tax discrimination under the 4R Act, a court should consider the state's broader tax system rather than focusing only on the challenged tax provision. To discuss the case, we have Andy Graywall, who is an associate professor of law at the University of Iowa College of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Graywall.
This is Andy Graywall at the University of Iowa. I'm going to talk to you for a few minutes about Alabama Department of Revenue v. CSX Transportation, which was argued in the Supreme Court on December 9. In a nutshell, this case involves federal limitations on a state's ability to tax railroads. For a long time, states blatantly discriminated against railroads and imposed high taxes on them. States figured that railroads were easy prey since they didn't vote and also couldn't move very easily. If you're a railroad and you have to get from A to B, you have no choice but to traverse through various states. So railroads faced unfair tax regimes. In 76, Congress passed a statute that limited the state's ability to tax railroads unfairly. For example, under the statute, if a state taxed commercial property at 3%, it could not tax railroad property at 5%. It had to treat railroad property in the same way that it treated commercial property generally. The 1976 statute also had a catch-all non-discrimination provision, which is at issue in this case. That statute says that, aside from the specific real estate taxes, a state cannot impose any other tax that discriminates against a rail carrier. Again, a state cannot impose any other tax that discriminates against a rail carrier. The CSX case deals with trying to figure out what is discrimination under this statute. In Alabama, a railroad company has to pay sales taxes on diesel fuel that its competitors don't have to. Under Alabama law, motor carriers don't pay diesel fuel sales taxes. Instead, they pay an excise tax when they purchase gasoline. Water carriers, which also compete with railroads, actually don't pay any taxes related to diesel fuel at all. The threshold question under the 76 statute, and which is the first question presented in this case, relates to determining how you define the comparison class for purposes of measuring discrimination. That is, to determine whether CSX is being discriminated against, do you compare it to all commercial enterprises generally? In which case you would say, well, look, a whole bunch of businesses out there are paying the diesel fuel tax, the sales tax. Or do you compare CSX just to its competitors, the motor carriers and the water carriers, who don't pay the diesel fuel sales tax? In the case, Alabama favors the broad approach. It wants to show that it's not discriminating against anybody. CSX is arguing for the competitor class approach because it wants to show that it is being singled out for unfair treatment. On this point, the Supreme Court seems on board with CSX. The 1976 statute said that for purposes of those real property taxes, you compare a railroad to commercial enterprises generally. But the catch-all non-discrimination provision doesn't have any limitation regarding industries. It just generally says don't discriminate, so the justices seemed pretty skeptical about Alabama's argument. So on this issue, I predict that CSX will win, and the proper comparison class for purposes of measuring discrimination is a railroad as compared to its competitors. The tougher issue relates to the second question presented, which goes to how you actually measure discrimination. On its face, the diesel fuel tax applies to railroads, but not to motor carriers or to water carriers. But the state argues that, at least insofar as motor carriers are concerned, CSX really isn't being discriminated against. Motor carriers actually pay an excise tax on their fuel purchases. So if you look at the tax code as a whole, yeah, railroads are paying a sales tax on diesel fuels, but motor carriers are just paying an excise tax instead. And if you look at all the numbers, the overall burden is similar. Water carriers don't pay any type of fuel tax, but Alabama argues that it's constitutionally prohibited from imposing a tax on interstate water commerce, and that constitutional limitation provides a justification for the tax exemption for water carriers. In other words, Alabama is not discriminating against railroads by granting a tax exemption to water carriers. The court's resolution of this second question is going to be a bit tricky. Might seem like there's an easy way out because the court can just say, well, you know what, there's the same precise tax burden on motor carriers as there is on railroads, so there's no discrimination here. But that approach can lead to fluctuating violations of the statute. In a particular year, the tax burdens might be similar, but maybe next year or 2 years from now, the burdens would be dissimilar. This would lead to a circumstance where in 1 year, a particular tax code whose language is not amended violates the federal statute, but in another year, it doesn't. So strange things will happen if you ask courts to determine the economic incidence of taxes in terms of measuring discrimination, as opposed to just looking at the statute and saying, look, railroads have to pay it, other people don't, and leaving that to be the beginning and end of the analysis. I'm not sure which way the court will rule on this issue, but I like the railroad's approach better. In terms of economic incidence, nobody really knows how to answer those questions definitively. The incidence of the corporate tax, for example, is frequently debated, and it seems odd to ask courts to figure out the incidence of various fuel-related taxes in terms of measuring discrimination. It just doesn't seem like something that is suitable for the judicial role. Of course, if a statute actually compels courts to do so, they have to do the best that they can, but I'm not convinced that the 1976 statute actually forces courts to measure the economic effects of a tax as opposed to look at the face of the statute to determine whether discrimination exists. I should also mention the complications caused by water carriers here. Even if railroads are on equal footing as motor carriers because of the excise tax, and when you run the numbers for a particular year, they have the same burdens, there still may be discrimination because water carriers don't pay any fuel-related taxes. The problem here is that the argument wasn't fleshed out below, and it might not be the right time for the court to rule on this issue. The justices therefore raised concerns that this case would have to be remanded to determine whether the exemption for water carriers by itself establishes discrimination against railroads, even if, as compared to motor carriers, railroads are not being discriminated against. This case was actually in the court before. This is the second trip for CSX in this particular case, so we might see a third visit before this dispute is finally resolved. Aside from the substantive issues, I thought there was a couple other interesting things about this case. In particular, during oral arguments, the railroad company was represented by Carter Phillips, one of the leading Supreme Court advocates. And the oral argument reflected a high degree of familiarity between Phillips and the justices. For example, when the state was arguing, the justices would not ask the state's attorney, what about CSX's brief? What about CSX's argument? Instead, they would refer to, oh, Phillips says this, Phillips' brief says that. It's fairly unusual to see that in an oral argument, again, referring to the advocate as opposed to the actual party. And even when Mr. Phillips closed his argument, he did not sit down. He instead said he would was happy to let the justices have their lunch. I suspect most of us would not close any oral arguments in front of the Supreme Court, or any other court for that matter, by telling the judge or justice, or justices, that they are now permitted to eat lunch. But with the rise of the Supreme Court bar, it seems like there's increasing familiarity between particular advocates and the justices. I don't take any position on whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. The justices seem to welcome the contributions of skilled advocates, but I still think it is interesting, or at the very least amusing. Second interesting thing about this case relates to the question presented. Alabama petitioned the court for cert, and it put all of its eggs in one basket. That is, its petition was limited to one question presented. It wanted the court to review the comparison class issue, and it did not raise the second question in terms of whether you measure discrimination by looking at economic effects as opposed to the face of the statute. But the Solicitor General wanted the court to add that second question, and the court, in fact, did so. It's fairly unusual for the Supreme Court to add questions presented, and this presents one of those rare scenarios. CSX objected to the addition of the question presented because usually the court binds a petitioner to the question in its petition and isn't willing to expand the scope of it. But this presents one of those rare cases where the court expanded the petition. I suppose it's possible that any final opinion could punt on that second issue by saying that, well, we should not have added the question. But given that the court itself didn't raise concerns regarding the addition of that question, I suspect that they will at least try to address both questions. With that, I will sign off, and I hope you enjoyed this podcast. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.